There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. It should be Midday Dauphin Island right now as we are live on the island at the rodeo site as it is day one of the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo going on through Sunday. And I'll tell you what, we will kind of be talking to you. We'll be talking to you today, also tomorrow in the middle of the day. And so come on by. See us. Even if we're not on there, come by and say hello. We'll be independent if I'm fishing or not. I'll be in and out of here and be by the vehicle and be able to say hello. All right. Coming up today on the show, lots to do. 6.5 stories with Dalton Norwig, as always. Plus, we will check in with Sean Powers, Dr. Powers, from right here at the rodeo site, and of course he is with the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, and Dr. Ship, who has been a perennial around here, Dr. Bob Ship, who's been on the show with me many times over the years, is out this year, and Sean Powers filling in. We'll talk more about that. Also, rodeo officials aplenty on the show today, but if you're on your way down to the island, if you're on your way down and you see some signage there that says trash blows, now, you may be amused by it. At the same time, you may wonder what that's all about. And to tell us more about it, Rick Frederick from the Mobile Bay National Estuary Program is in, because that's y'all putting those signs up.
It is. We've had a good time with this program so far. It's a fun campaign, and Rodeo Weekend's a perfect weekend to do it. The Mobile Bay National Estuary Program, with several partners a few years ago, introduced the Create a Clean Water Future campaign, which is a free public service campaign to educate people and bring awareness to stormwater runoff and the negative impact that stormwater can have on our waterways, and it, you know, trash and litter at the forefront, first thing people think about. I mean, it also involves, you know, sediment runoff and fertilizers and paint and grass clippings and everything that hits the ground and flows into our rivers.
There's visible and non-visible.
That's right.
We see those litter traps clogged, see the clean out there. That's the visible portion, but obviously there's a lot more that's going in the waterways.
Absolutely. I mean, as soon as something hits the ground, just because it hits the ground somewhere, that's not where it's going to stay. We get so much rain here, and eventually it is going to make its way into the storm drains and into our water. So one thing we see, you know, whether it's, you know, people realize it or not, but we got trash blowing out of truck beds. We got trash blowing out of boats. And what a perfect weekend to address those two issues. So we came up with the Trash Blows campaign, and pretty good little tagline.
Yes, it is.
We've got, when folks are driving down to the island this weekend, we've got several big banners. We've got small yard signs, just bringing awareness, educating people, and reminding people to stow your trash.
Yeah, and remind people. Right? Yeah. Because, I mean, most people realize that it's not a good thing. I would hope they would realize it's not a good thing. It almost just a little reminder to, hey, do a little policing at the back of the truck before, or the boat.
Absolutely, just awareness and a reminder. And we've got a sign, big banner down at Billy Goat Hole and all over the island. A couple other things we're doing. We're also offering a shuttle service for anglers in the mornings and the afternoons down at Billy Goat Hole.
So you are now everybody's new favorite person.
Exactly. Yeah, so we've got two vehicles running. They're well marked with signs. When you take a ride, we're also going to give you a real cool, these yellow stash your trash mesh bags to put on your boat, and don't be trashy or a trash blows drink hugger. So look for our folks over the weekend doing that. Another fun thing is, if we have our anglers or anybody on the island, if you take a selfie with a bag of trash you've picked up, you can bring it by our tent. We've got a tent in the rodeo site, or a table, excuse me, in the rodeo site. And if you hashtag trash blows, or go on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook with that message, you can get a free t-shirt, a Clean Water Future t-shirt, a hat or visor, or a beach towel. So come find us in there. And
I'll be doing that.
Yeah, share it and get the message out. The other big thing we're doing this year is introducing recycling for the first time during the rodeo. So
tell us where to find.
Shout out to Thompson Engineering. They brought the bins down, the blue tops with the slots and the clear bags. They're all through the rodeo site. Man, we got about 8 or 10 bins. I just was out there putting them out.
Right.
So Thompson Engineering got those down here. Earth Resources Recycling, Braxton Kittrell, he's going to be down with some big bins to collect it all at the end of the week.
What all are we recycling?
Plastic bottles, plastic bags.
How about aluminum cans?
Aluminum cans, even glass, cardboard.
Right.
All of it, yeah. So we.
I'm just guessing, after doing the rodeo for 25 years of my life.
Right.
Bigger bag for aluminum cans and anything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there'll be a few aluminum cans deposited this weekend, I do believe. I might even contribute a couple myself.
That's right. Well, you mentioned some about, the trash, and we talk about the stormwater runoff. And in the city, we're always talking about, you do this, it goes in a stormwater drain, it goes to this, it goes to this waterway, and it ends up, we're in the Dog River watershed, we're in the Three Mile Creek watershed, somewhere. Here, it's...
Yeah,
this is as direct as it gets.
Exactly.
It doesn't have a very long trip to get in the water. It blows out of a truck going across a bridge here, and it's in Mississippi Sound or the Bay.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're not doing a good job. I mean, it's out there. There's so much trash in our area, and again, most people are conscientious of it, but just as a reminder and make people aware, they got to think about what they're doing. And the area is so beautiful, and everybody loves being on the water. There's nobody that wants to see it dirty. So, go to cleanwaterfuture.com. A lot of tips and ideas there. Look for the trash blows this weekend. I want to give a shout out to the town of Dolphin Island and Mayor Collier. They've been a good partner for us as well to help us with the recycling and, of course, the JCs and the rodeo.
Yeah, I'm reminded more and more. I mean, you see it like on the bridge.
Yep.
You see it on the side of the road here. But when I dragged my shrimp net, I was doing it last weekend.
Right.
The stuff that people think, out of sight, out of mind, it's still there, and I'm dragging and I'm getting plastic bags and things and trash that have been in the water for who knows how long that I'm getting in a shrimp net.
Yeah, we're finding there's a lot of trash, like on Three Mile Creek, up in the banks. It's been there. We call it legacy trash for God knows how loud. We're cleaning that up. Don Bates with Thompson Engineering has come up with this litter trap. Hopefully people have seen on our web pages and Facebook, small stream litter collection. And we were out earlier this week on a Slava Creek, and one of his had come loose we were working with, and the amount of trash that was just flowing over by the mall is just mind-boggling. So, we want to try to make a difference with this.
You have an uphill climb here, Rick.
Yeah,
because
no doubt.
For people that are already engaged, I think you're doing the right thing. And they know they don't need to do it. Just reminding them. Look in the back of your truck. Look in your boat. Pick it up. And don't let it blow out. That's great. But then there's people in the town, I see them, that are not engaged at all.
Right.
There are people that we're worried about. We're worried about litter traps. We're worried about policing. We're the people that show up on a Saturday morning to do a cleanup. But we're quite often not the people that are making the biggest impact. How do you get through to the people that are not engaged in it? How do you say, no more?
Right. We really are, a lot of times preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
The people out there, the people that, are not littering.
Right.
So we try to do a lot about community. We get into the community. Education early to the young people, in Three Mile Creek as an example, we're really going out into those different communities.
Good.
Getting the people involved, access, with Three Mile Creek, we want to get people on the water down here. If people that are on the water and using the water that love it aren't going to pollute it.
That's very smart.
So there's a lot of people that just aren't connected to our water. We try to work with them and show them what we have, and hopefully they'll make an impact, and then they'll talk to their people and their people, and it's got to start kind of as a groundswell.
Because you take some, whether it be the Mississippi Sound or a ditch behind your house, you take some possession of that if you use it.
Absolutely.
And you appreciate it. Hey, we're coming right back from the break. We'll talk more about this also. We'll catch up with what's going on here at the rodeo site, because I told y'all fish would already start being weighed in. I was talking about the morning show. Some big fish have already passed in front of the mobile command unit. We'll talk about some of those weights and talk rodeo when we return right here from the rodeo site on Dolphin Island. It's Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And a lot of people already on the island. A lot of people obviously fishing with the cannon shot this morning at 5, heading out. And it's good to talk to Justin Thompson because we've talked in the past about what's going on and leading in and all the publicity here. But today, not only are you talking to the media, you're also Dockmaster.
Yeah, that's right.
The Dockmaster, what does that mean? What does that do?
Direct the boats. So as the traffic is coming into Alo Bay, we have to have someone who is the official voice of the docks, and we tell people which dock we want them. We radio our guys working the docks to flag people down as they're coming in, know which way to go. Just try to keep the docks running smoothly as long as we can.
And that gets to be serious traffic. I was thinking about just last weekend for the kids when we saw y'all doing the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. Coming in, you got to get in, get the fish weighed, get those folks back on their boat, get that boat out so the next boat can get in. And y'all are like, you're running traffic here between now and Sunday.
Like an air traffic controller.
That's right. Okay, let's talk about what you've seen. So if you're dock master, you're pretty much seeing what's coming and going so far.
Yeah.
What have you been seeing?
So I've been on the water side all morning. We've had steady traffic all morning. We've pretty much had boats at the dock since we opened at 10. For the most part, normally 5 boats or so at a time. Of course, we got room for about 12, so we're by no means overcrowded yet. But it's been a steady morning. It's been good. Been good traffic coming through. I haven't seen a lot from the roadside, but I've seen several people in and out of the gates.
Yeah, they've been coming right here in front of us.
Right,
I've been monitoring it. I see a bunch of tails from big fish sticking out of coolers and buckets.
That's right.
They've been going in. And also got a chance to just put the picture up on Twitter. We didn't get the other day to talk about the live tank here. It's one of the great things people can check out as people in the live division bringing live speckled trout, live redfish in.
That's right. Yeah, so we have the live speck, live redfish. We've got a tank set up that South Alabama helps us monitor. As people bring in those live fish, they are weighed and South, it goes as and tags them, and they put them in this tank to rejuvenate them, and then we'll release every fish off the dock right here at the site, release them back into Alo Bay and let them be happy again.
You know, this was neat with the tagging programs they've done with triple tail and with speckled trout and redfish, getting some idea of the travel patterns or the lack thereof. You had this big idea that these fish go way over here, come way back, and then sometimes the tags, they said, they went 300 yards.
Yep.
And 2 years later, they're, 300 or 400 yards from where they were the previous year.
It is. It's really cool. We do when we do our check presentation to South Alabama every year, given our yearly donation, some of the grad students that are here collecting all this data with South, with the Sea Lab, they'll give us a presentation, put together a slideshow, and that's one of the things they show us is showing their pings on these tags, and it's a very zoomed out map because all the way up into Fowl River, all the way up in Dog River, Fowl River, through up into the bay. It's incredible how many different pings they're catching on these fish that are all released right here at the rodeo site, and they're going everywhere. But like you said,
some hang out close. Some just go, I'll stay here. But yeah, so you're right. Some they'd be up in the Delta, and some never left the house.
Yep.
Justin, let's talk about this, too, because you mentioned a donation to Sea Lab, and I get this question a bunch. They said, Sean, you're always doing rodeo stuff, talking about how great the rodeo is and JC's. They said, what are they doing year-round? What are they doing with the money? And I said, y'all are doing charities right here at home.
Right. Yeah, so we've this year we hope to cross the pending a successful rodeo this weekend, but we hope to cross the $300,000 mark donated to South Alabama.
Wow.
And that's the Department of Marine Sciences we donate to. We're sitting at about $275,000 that we've donated over the years right now. So we're hoping with another successful year we can try to cross that 300 mark either this year or next. But we also we're giving a donation to St. Jude's this year.
Great charity.
Right. Yeah, and that's it's one that everybody has a lot of respect for, and we were happy to make some connections there this year, and we're going to be making a donation to them. So last weekend the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament.
Right, this is what's great. I love how this works. Tell
folks
from the money from the kids tournament, and then
So every dollar brought in from the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament last weekend, every proceed we get goes toward the Mobile JC's Children's Shopping Tour. We take needy families, the needy children from around the area. I think we took 50 kids shopping this year for Christmas.
Wow.
And it's they get the chance to buy their their family gifts for Christmas that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. And we have the Azalea Trail Maids there, which of course is also a JC project. The Azalea Trail Maids are there. They wrap up all the presents for the kids, and it's great. It's a really neat thing to see, you know, a kids tournament that completely funds a children's shopping
tour. That's what I think is so great about it, right?
It's really cool.
I thought about this, too, as you're talking about being Doc Master and everything going on, and then I see my buddy James West, one of your cohorts.
He
just stepped in and waved hello. It gets me to think about the number of y'all that I know and those that I'm just meeting this year, but how many of can you divulge the number of JCs that are working down here to make this possible?
Yeah, we've
and y'all's wives. Let's talk more.
Yeah. So we've got about roughly 60, 65 or so members of the JCs that work on the rodeo itself. Now the JCs also put on the Greater Gulf State Fair and also the Azalea Trail Maids. In total, we're sitting right at the 100 mark on members of the Mobile JCs, but rodeo members we're 60, 65 or so, and a lot of the other, you know, some of the fair members that don't really do a lot with the rodeo through the year. They don't come to meetings right every weekend or every month and all, but a lot of them show up this weekend to help us just because it's, I mean,
yeah, cause it
we, takes all,
work.
We all,
I mean,
we all help, you know, and we're the same way with the fair. We, you know, I'm not a fair board member, but I still go and help out during the fair, and you know, so we're all just a big family.
And y'all are, I mean, y'all are grinding, y'all are working. I saw you, you know, Liars contest last night, everything going on last night,
that's
and getting
right
those crews out and the people checked out for Big Game Jackpot and King and all that, and you're doing all that. And it goes late. I saw you late here. I was buying a jackpot ticket late, and then I'm here early this morning to do the morning show. And you're here.
Oh well, we were here at 5 a.m. for Cannon Blast too.
That's right. Yeah, you're here for the Cannon Blast, and then
I left here about 1:45 last night, and I was back here at 5 a.m. for Cannon Blast.
And y'all do this on purpose and for no money for
that's
charity.
Right. That's right. That's right. We all actually paid to be a member of the JC.
Right.
Well,
you paid
we're
to
paying
be able to
sleep
this, 3 hours and work in the heat.
That's right.
God
but,
bless you, man.
We love it. It's a good time, and it's great to interact with anglers. You know, it's. You know, pretty much everybody's got an excellent attitude, and everybody's appreciative, and it's fun. We enjoy it.
Well, yeah, this is just I was saying this morning. Even a city that's over 300 years old, and all the things that we find to be traditions in Mobile, out of the new tradition, do you understand 85? Anywhere else in the country would be that something that old,
right?
You know. Here though, I want to point out as a modern tradition, y'all set the benchmark on a modern tradition in our community.
Yeah. Well, we're proud of it. We try to do our best to give a positive image to the community of,
right,
of everything. You know, it's a lot of work, but
I mean,
it's,
the history it's behind it. And I would say people can go to the website too and look at some of the history.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's it goes back to 1929, and outside of war and an oil spill, it's happened every year.
Yeah.
You know, so. It's not something that's just willy nilly put on a whim, you know. It's
right.
As soon as this week is over with, our first meeting, we'll have two meetings in August, and the new president will get elected in August, and the new president will start going to work. So I mean, this isn't like we're done and we'll get back on it in March
right,
next
right.
year. You know, this is we're wide open all year.
Absolutely, man. Well, as always, thank you for having us out, being part of this,
absolutely,
Justin. And we'll be reporting more coming up tomorrow.
I want to mention tonight, we got the Molly Ringwald's band. So come on down. We're going to pack the site tonight.
Yeah, I had Rolling in the Hay was fantastic last night.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Molly Ringwald's, and then you have afternoon music and evening
right,
music.
Yes, yeah. We got music playing this afternoon live on stage, and then Molly Ringwald's will start at 7:30 tonight. And same with tomorrow and Sunday. We'll have bands during the day and then more headliners toward the evening.
All right.
So yeah, man.
this is a lot of fun, and I'll let you get back to boat traffic control.
That's right, boat traffic control. That's right.
Justin, thanks, man.
appreciate it, Sean.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. And reminder, too, Rick, folks who are coming down here, they see the sign says trash blows.
You got it.
What do they do? How do they do a better job? Just
make sure you stow your trash and don't let it blow out the back, and grab some. We'll be down at the Billy Goat Hole running shuttles at 3 o'clock today and 4 o'clock again tomorrow morning. We got some mesh trash bags for you to put on your boat, collect your trash, take a picture, and come by our table and get some free giveaways for the Create a Clean Water Future campaign.
I want to take you up on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll bring you some by. Yeah,
we'll stack those up as
sounds
well.
Great.
That's great.
Thank you.
And online, more information about what you're doing, where
you
they go?
You can go to cleanwaterfuture.com. mobilebayNEP.com or the mobilebayNEP.com.
All right, very good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Sean.
All right, coming right back, more from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. We are live. We'll be here until 2 o'clock for this show and, of course, tomorrow during the day for our outdoor show. And when we come back, the science of the rodeo. You know, we've been talking about the fun of the rodeo, and Justin mentioned some about the collection being done and what's happening here with the scientific research, some of the tagging, but there's a lot more than that goes on. Joining us from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, Dr. Sean Powers, when we come back, we'll talk with him more about what they learn and what they're learning over time down here, and also kind of what we can learn. We come down here and look at the fish, and a reminder too, we talked about the music happening, but a reminder too that if you just want to come down here and check fish out, whether they're the ones in the live tank or they're some on ice or people are weighing them in, what a great chance. If you haven't spent time on the water around here, you want to see just the diversity of fish in our area, this is a great time to do it. So we'd love for you to be out here and be part of it right here on Dolphin Island. It is the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and it's Midday Mobile live on site. Come see us.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And good to have Dr. Sean Powers in the studio with us here. And I know that I'm taking you away from weighing fish for a little bit, but I've got air conditioning.
You do. It is awesome in here.
So you cool off a little bit, too. And you are head of everything on the weight side there for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And I mentioned Dr. Shipp at the beginning of the show, said you would tell us Dr. Shipp is just taking one off here, right?
Yeah, he's got a scheduling conflict, okay. And I've been at Bob's side for 14 years, so he thought I could handle it by myself.
Have you thought about taking, I mean, you have, I see, I like your hat, St. Paul's hat, I like it, but have you thought about getting like a Dr. Bob hat out here? To?
No, the Dr. Bob hat is unique to Dr. Bob, and I'll have to get some signature hat.
Right. I'm going to have to figure out what it's going to be, like a Stetson or something.
Yeah,
It's going to be your signature hat. You know, I've been talking about all the fun that goes around the rodeo. And all the excitement that happens each year when we come down here to fish. But also mention the fact there's science going on. And with the Sea Lab, y'all are here to obviously help and do the weights, but there's a reason you have, not only you, but you have a full cast of students out here and people that are taking samples. What does this mean for you?
So we're doing multiple things out here. One of the things, as you mentioned, our footprint is just as large as the actual weigh-in footprint, the science footprint.
Really?
And we have, you know, lots of undergraduates and some graduate students in here. So they're learning some basic techniques of being a fisheries biologist, how to sample fish properly, eventually how to use their ear stones to age the fish, which is really important. A lot of the times what we're collecting is the stomach contents and the ear stones, because that's going to tell us a lot about how the fish live. And also how old the fish are. For a lot of species, we need that information to figure out how healthy the stock is. One of the species we're interested in a lot in is flounder. Yeah. And flounder has been a species of some concern.
You know, because I'm going to ask you as a fisherman, because flounders seem like they're down to us. But that's anecdotal. I don't have any science.
And it does look like they are down. Okay. There's a formal stock assessment that Marine Resource will release eventually in the next few months. But it's not good right now. Flounder are kind of in a low point. So we want to see what the ages are. So is it all just 1-year-old fish, or do we get some 4- and 5-year-olds, which are the real old flounder in the population? And we do that with a lot of fish that we're interested in. We do that with grouper. You know, we think snapper is in pretty good.
All right. Looks like we lost connection there temporarily with Sean Sullivan, talking with Dr. Sean Powers from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab. Sean on location at Dolphin Island for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. While he works to get that connection back, and it looks like he's working on that right now, we're going to go to a quick break while Sean tries to reconnect from Dolphin Island. We'll do that and we'll get right back. You're listening to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we're back. We just had to put some new oil and some gasoline in that engine, crank it back up, and get rolling here for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo Midday Mobile. We are live, and great conversation, Dr. Sean Powers from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and also the head of the weight and science portion of the rodeo, and a lot of fish coming in here. But we were talking about what y'all are doing and the reasons why you have so many grad students and students here. There's a lot of science. There's at least a lot of data to be had here.
Yeah, that's correct. And part of it is just to train the next generation of scientists, but also it's to collect the data. And as I was saying, one of the most valuable things we find out about the fish that are brought in are the how old they are. And we recognize that this is kind of a skewed portion of the population because they want to bring in the biggest fish.
Them, sure.
But it's real hard for us on a normal sampling survey to sample the big fish.
Right.
So the idea that thousands of fishermen are out there collecting and targeting the biggest fish in the population really lets us know something about the health of that population.
What about, you and I were talking during the news break there about longevity in some of these, and we really, I think we're talking more reef fish and inshore fish than pelagics, but let's talk snapper. You mentioned grouper as well. What's an old snapper? What's an old red snapper?
So an old red snapper would be one that's 40 years old. They'll live to 54 years.
Now I think you could probably hear right now jaws hitting the floor all over the place. That old,
and those ages we get from the growth bands in their bones, but it's been validated with radio carbon aging. So we know that they live that long. We also know that as fish get older, the females produce more eggs. And so what we want in a population like red snapper is a lot of fish that are over 10 years old. You know, having a lot of fish that are 10, 20, you don't need all of them to be 40 or 50, but you need a good portion, 20, 30% of your population, to be those 10-year-old females that are producing all those eggs.
By the time they reach 10, and I know each case could be different, but by the time they reach 10, are they those biggest of the big fish? Like when I've caught just a handful of fish that are snapper bigger than 20 pounds in my life. Could those be 10-year-old or 30-year-old? Or is there a point where that growth slows down?
There's a point where that growth slows down. So a 25-pound snapper could be 10 years old. It could be 30 years old. It just kind of levels off because they put more energy into reproduction.
So but, that seems like they are the if you had to pick one fish out of the population more valuable than another fish, they're more valuable.
Correct. And there's a term for them. It's called BOF, big, old, fat female. And that's what fisheries biologists want to see.
Well, okay, then I got this question. This may be an uncomfortable question, but the nature of what happens, and I'm not even talking about during the rodeo, but during the snapper season, which, by the way, ends on Sunday as we've reached a tonnage, by definition of curtailing the season, right? And also, let's say even more importantly, curtailing the daily creel to two fish. It seems to prefer for those older fish than it does for smaller fish. I mean, I'm one of those people. Growing up, we didn't do a lot of culling. We kept our fish, and, you know, now, you know what, put that fish back, put that other fish back, we can do better. And we keep older fish and bigger fish.
Correct. It's a serious concern that there's high grading.
Yeah.
That you're not keeping the first two fish that you catch, that you know there's a bigger one
because
out there.
Because we're trying to achieve a certain amount of weight of fillets, right? You know, so two fish, I mean, that's the...
The average size is quite impressive these days of just any. I remember when I started in 2003 here in the Gulf, it was hard to catch a 16-inch snapper.
Right.
I mean, and that was the low point in the fishery, and it's really gone up.
And now what was hard before is now the low end.
Yes, which is a great sign, but, you know, we hope that people don't high grade to the point where they're throwing back dead fish. That's just wasting, and that's not
sure.
A good
depends
fisherman
on how deep
effort.
You're fishing, and if you're doing your proper venting and all those kind of things. But but there's mortality from somebody who doesn't vent properly or a fish that had a tough time coming up. There's also let's say natural marine mammal mortality as the porpoises are ready to go. You know,
they'll circle, and you know, what we've been seeing a lot more is bite offs. Mm-hmm. We think that the sandbar shark population is recovering in particular. It's been a prohibited species for years, and it's really bouncing back. And most of the times you get those big bite offs, it's a sandbar.
You know, that's another thing. We're just talking about, you know, growing up fishing out of Dauphin Island, things I've seen change. The size of snapper, I completely agree, has obviously gone up. The number of sharks has gone up.
Yep.
Is that due to long lining out, or what do you...
Both of those are through management that we recognize that those fisheries were in trouble, and we intervened and restored or recovered those populations. You know, so much of the frustration with the red snapper fishery is we need to accelerate that recovery and get it going faster. And scientists actually disagree at where we are on that recovery curve. But, you know, it is a excellent lesson that good management works.
Yes.
I mean...
Well, and that's I think, the frustration for a lot of us. I realize it's anecdotal, not scientific. I do. But, you know, let's just go back 10 years when, the federal regulations were coming in, gone to a draconian level here on the number of days, and I had places where I could go rev my engine up over a spot in the Gulf and watch a snapper come up behind my prop. You know what I'm saying? I could point you 60 of them right behind my prop.
Yeah.
I could feed them by hand, you know?
And that a lot of it is being helped down, I think, by the state management. I think that's a very good idea. To give the regions more control over it, because things might be great in Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, but it's Florida that's, you know, the feds have to manage Gulf wide. You know, if we can manage
species,
locally.
Yeah, I mean, I get federal management of, you know, of a migratory species, a pelagic species. I do have, I'm definitely on board for state control of something that. It's somewhat of a homebody species, right? Can we say that about snapper?
Well, you can say that about the juveniles and adults. The problem is that the eggs drift for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So the spawning population is kind of shared amongst the states. And so trying to figure out how much of our eggs for snapper are coming from Florida, how many are coming from Mississippi. Alabama is just in a good place where it's a mixing zone for both sides.
Right.
We receive and then we produce larvae for red snapper that go out. So Alabama is really critical. The North Central Gulf is critical, and it's great that we also have all that habitat for the fish.
Well, that's right. And that's the thing about being site-specific. You know, I wonder... and I'm happy for state management because I was troubled with the idea that you would try to manage Gulf wide because there could be, you know, an area of habitat that's not right for snapper. And if you're sampling there and saying there's no snapper, well, you know what? There's not a lot of gray squirrels in the Great Plains either. But I mean, they shouldn't say, well, our population's not doing much here when they don't have the same habitat.
Yeah. And it works the opposite way. If our population is decreasing, we want to know that off Alabama.
Right.
Because we want to intervene.
Let's talk about, you're talking about management being able to turn things around. We're talking about the example of red snapper. I think another one here I love to look at, and I think it's a one that people can shake their head and see exactly yes, and that is redfish.
Yes.
And the management that went through redfish after the blackened redfish craze dropped the population. I'll tell you this, that every 5 years that's gone by since the 1980s to now in my life, I think the red fishing has gotten better.
Yeah, I mean,
the good old days are now to me on the red fishing.
No, it's amazing. And we can see it in the age structure that we essentially don't get, we didn't get a whole lot of those older fish. But now you can actually see in the age structure the fact that 1989, 1990 was such a critical point where they stopped the purse seiners. You can see that we have fish. We don't have any fish older than 1990, but since then we have a lot of the old fish in the population.
Is the same thing true about those red drum or the red fish is the red snapper for being boffs?
Yeah, it's very true for that. And red drum will live about 46 years, so they can get up there.
I think you're opening a lot of eyes to the longevity of these fish. When people are going, dang, these fish could be older than I am that I'm catching, which doesn't seem to be so common in you know, people think about or, you know, maybe a speckled trout or a bass or something like that, do they have that kind of longevity?
No, speckled trout, an old speckled trout is 8 or 9 years old. Bass, I'm not sure of. I do mostly marine.
Right, I know you do saltwater. I'm just thinking of species I don't think they have that kind of longevity. What about speckled trout? What about the populations of speckled trout around here? What are you seeing?
The latest we've seen seems like it's a very stable population that, you know, so much with it, except especially because it's a younger fish, so much of it is going to be the recruitment each year. And you'll get some variation. Some years conditions are all perfect. Some years there's too much fresh water inflow, for example. So we see variability, but, you know, we see a relatively stable index of abundance, which means that we're getting enough recruitment. And, you know, anecdotally, I'm a fisherman, too. And I grew up in Louisiana where there's, you know, trout everywhere.
Right.
But the trout fishery here is just amazing because they're so much bigger. I mean, the abundance of bigger fish.
This is my favorite time to have a fisheries biologist from Louisiana on to talk about something. And I've been fishing in Louisiana here my whole life. And I'm just baffled because, well, I have found there's a few places in, you know, Lake Calcasieu over that way, mm-hmm. but in southeast Louisiana, there's a few places you can catch big trout, but it seems like such an abundance of those small ones. Do they not go on to become 17, 18, 19, 20, 22-inch speckled trout, or what happens?
No, they just don't. It's
wow.
It's something. There's two types of overfishing we worry about. One is recruitment, which is you depleted the population so much, you don't have enough larvae. That's really bad. It takes a long time to recover from that. But there's another one where it's just growth overfishing. You got enough recruits, you're just not letting them become big enough to harvest, so you maximize your yield in the harvest. And Louisiana, just with that 25 and 12 inch limit, just hasn't
so, okay,
let them
so
rebuild.
There's not a limiting, there's not a natural limiting factor in that case. It's man-made, in your opinion?
In my opinion, yes, because they definitely have, they're losing habitat, but they have a lot of habitat that's adequate for those species.
What about, you know, you mentioned flounder at the beginning and concerns on flounder, which I'm glad y'all are looking into, because mm-hmm. I, you know, as a fisherman, I've had concerns about it. Anything that you're monitoring now that has any connection to the oil spill, whether, you know, I mean, it would be an easy assumption, flounder on the bottom, oil on the bottom, but I don't know that connection's been made.
No, we've been looking at it, and we measured for, and obviously the state and the federal government measured PAH levels, the contaminants from oil, in flounder for a while after the spill, and we didn't see any spikes, but one of the things that can happen is that that oiled habitat can produce less fish. Mainly I'm thinking about more Louisiana than Alabama. But here we're not seeing any clear signs in Alabama, although it is kind of coincident that people talk about the decline of flounder being 2010, 2011.
Well, and that's the thing that makes me say I'm worried, because it seems so easy. I don't want to believe it, because I've been, you know, taught over time that don't jump at those assumptions. But it does line up.
It does line
but
up.
But that doesn't, I mean, it's, the only is not correct.
The only problem is that the flounder are a winter spawner, and so they wouldn't have been spawning during the spill. The eggs wouldn't have been in the water column during the spill, which was in the summer.
But that following winter, couldn't there still be?
There could have been some residual oil in some of those habitats, and it could have affected it, but we should have seen a bounce back by now. Flounder, an old flounder, is 5 or 6 years.
Okay, so that population turns over fast enough that we would see a recovery in it.
Yeah.
All right, other species you're watching from the sea lab, what's of interest? What are you looking for today?
You know, one of the cool things is tarpon. We have a cooperative with some of the tarpon fishermen out on the water, and we have a chase boat right now meeting the tarpon fishermen when they do land a tarpon, because it's video release,
right.
But we're putting satellite tracking tags on the tarpon, and so we can get their position every few hours
Let me log into that website?
We'll have to deal with that.
For the rest of the summer, I need that on through. I need to be able to go ahead and figure out where the pond is, because that's a story. That's a migratory fish that they're coming from, what could be coming from way down, you know, somewhere in Florida and coming up to our neighborhood.
And, you know, that is a big mystery species that we're interested in, because they used to be abundant in the 20s, 30s.
Yes. They're the symbol of the Alabama deep sea fishing.
Absolutely. And there's no harvest for them, no one eats the tarpon. So why did they disappear? appear, or why are they in such lower abundance? It's not only here, it's in Galveston, it's in Port Aransas, Texas. You know, they're still doing fine in Florida, but for some reason, you know, they're not migrating our way anymore.
Now that's odd. So the population's not changed, you don't think?
I don't think so.
It's just the migration pattern.
The migration pattern. Most of them are coming from Florida. That's where the big nursery areas are for tarpon. Although we've caught a few small tarpon, really small tarpon, around here. Most of them are coming from Florida and migrating is what we think, and then migrating back. But these satellite tags will let us know what an Alabama tarpon does. And you know, we're going to have five or six more tagged, hopefully.
All right. When that website goes up and those tags go out, I'll be asking you questions.
All right.
Where we can see them. Dr. Powers, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Coming right back, more from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, Midday Mobile, live from the island. And you got questions on fish weights so far, you can check them out at adsfr.com. Those posted results are on there now if you want to check the leaderboard.